theater.com. Good evening and welcome to Body, Mind, Spirit Oasis. You're listening to WKNH Keene 91.3 FM. And this is your host, John Michael Dumais. For the next 2 hours, we'll be offering inspiring conversations and enlightening experiences for creating a more vital and harmonious self, community, and planet. The next hour of programming is called Oasis Forum, where we feature interviews with local and regional practitioners, artists, authors, visionaries, and activists. We'll be discussing news of the day, important books, developments in health and healing, and many other issues for creating a sustainable present and future. Musicians, poets, and other artists will be performing their inspirational works. Then, later this evening, from 8 to 9 p.m., tune in for Oasis Journeys, where we will offer an ever-changing menu of inspirational readings, meditations, inner journeys, and other mind-expanding excursions, accompanied by New Age and ambient music and nature soundscapes and textures. Oasis Journeys will help you relieve stress and anxiety, deepen self-awareness, and enhance your sense of well-being. And now, welcome to Oasis Forum, where we explore issues that can help us positively evolve our lives, our society, and our planet. Oasis Forum features authors, activists, artists, and healers working to increase our appreciation of the interconnectedness of life on Earth. Each week, we explore a new topic that impacts our health, our families, our communities, our work, and our environment. Our goal is not just to discuss present challenges, but to develop an awareness of root causes and, importantly, to explore potential solutions. At Oasis Forum, our aim is to inspire hope and share practical ideas for creating a world that works for all. Good evening. This is John Michael, and we are ready for Oasis Forum, and we're very happy to have in our studio tonight a local mother, wife, friend, my wife, and member of the community, and the founder of Mothers and Others Uniting. It's an organization for creating a nonviolent and just world for all children, and thank you for joining us tonight, Susan.
Hi, John.
All right. And we are very happy to have you here because I feel like the whole issue of peace and nonviolence is really at the core of creating better relationships, better families, better communities, and, of course, a better world, even though the challenge seems to be a really big one. But before we get talking about your organization, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved?
Sure. I am, you know, as you said, I am a mother, a wife, a friend, a member of a community. What I am not is a longstanding activist. I grew up in the 70s. I in a very suburban, very conservative, very Republican environment, was not present despite what was going on in the world and the activism in the 60s and 70s. And really just was moved by other things. And it wasn't until I became a mother and suddenly and rather unwelcomingly recognized that if other mothers' children were not safe, then I had no right to expect that my child was going to be safe. And that was a terrifying thought because I had just before that realized that the rest of my life would be about keeping this little guy safe. And I ignored that feeling for quite a while, and it really wasn't until sometime in the last presidential campaign, listening to Democratic candidates puff and huff and talk in you know, in ways that didn't move me at all and didn't give me any hope that the world was going to be different if they were elected, that it dawned on me that I had to do something other than complain and worry. And so I sent an email to all the mothers I knew, because I had been in conversation with, you know, my friends, sort of saying, you know, talking about what I was worried about and sort of discovering that, in fact, they were worried about the same things, and the same things were waking us up at 3 a.m. And I just sent out an email saying, you know, I mean, the shorthand of it was, can't we do better than this? And isn't there something inherent in being a mother that really requires that we do something about this? And a whole bunch of them, you know, and I am eternally grateful I can see these women's faces right now. And hello, if you're listening out there. And yeah, they said, yeah, let's see. We are not, at Mothers Uniting, we are not experts. We are not, we're not there, although I think we're all reasonably competent women in our own right. We're not there because of some magic skill set that we have or, you know, I mean, some of us are longstanding activists, but others, like me, are just getting started. We're there, I guess, united in a common passion and belief that we are obligated, and we also have the power to, you know, to make our world different. And so that's what we're setting out to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed that this past fall, I think it was October 5th, 2004, you organized a rather ambitious event called Waging Peace, Another World is Possible. It featured Holly Near in concert and a lot of workshops with local and regional notables from Keene State College and from elsewhere. Can you tell us a little bit about that and about what made you think about taking on that kind of very ambitious undertaking?
Sure. We probably didn't think enough about taking on that ambitious undertaking, or we might not have done that. And I need to back up a little bit, because as we got started, and we were really asking ourselves the question. So, you know, certainly our focus on mothers isn't that mothers are better at this or that uniquely qualified or anything else, but more a strategy that mothers are very powerful people, but they are underrepresented in the political and social conversation about where our world is going. And they're underrepresented specifically as mothers. If they're front and center in that conversation, motherhood is almost something you're invited to put in your backpack and not really talk about and not really leverage and not as a come-from position. Mm-hmm. And so we were asking ourselves, we started by asking ourselves, what is it that what are the barriers to mothers really being in sustained, committed action, you know, around this? And with a complete acknowledgement that there are many, many mothers who are in sustained political, you know, and committed action, but not enough to be changing the course, and not as much as, you know, from my perspective, they're entitled and we are entitled and obligated, you know, to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when in doubt, ask your friends. And so we got 40 mothers together for a half a day, which was a minor miracle in its own right. What mothers have to do to get free, you know, mm-hmm. is pretty substantial. And we kind of asked that question, and it was, I'm just so glad we did that, because the answers were not intuitive and rather surprising. But, you know, if I'm speaking in the voice of those mothers, what they told us, by far the most important barrier was, I don't feel confident or articulate enough to have a public voice. And, John Michael, if you could have seen the women in the room that didn't feel confident or articulate enough to have a public voice, that was just amazing.
Most of the room, then?
Well, the point was, these are very competent you know, women. And yet still there is this feeling that when you're in that, you know, of being easily bowled over by arguments or facts or data, and that that was, you know, well over half of the women really self-identified with that issue. The second one was kind of a low-level depression, if you will, that I don't feel like real change is possible. The third one was, I don't know what to do. And the fourth one, and this is out of many, many, many other issues we explained, the fourth one was, I don't see myself as an activist. But when we peeled that one back, what was really at the heart of that was, I believe anyway, it was a lack of comfort with anger. And just feeling like when as mothers, when we connect with these issues, when we connect with where is the world going, when we connect with how far off course it is, you know, from our perspective, we get really angry. And that's not, you know, an emotion we're perhaps as comfortable with, you know, as some other people. In particular, you know, I think mothers see themselves as responsible for maintaining the milieu of the home and the family. And it's a little hard to do, to maintain that in the way you want when you're really mad. And so that was just a troublesome feeling. And this is a long way of explaining why we did October 5th, because we said, okay, if these are the barriers to mothers being in sustained, committed action around creating a nonviolent and just world for all children, then we, this year has to be about building confidence and building communities, community around in that population of, of mothers. And, you know, even ironically, I mean, you know, Holly, choosing Holly Near was such a moment of inspiration. Holly was not somebody I knew of, you know, except, you know, in faded memories back in the 60s. But when her name was suggested and the more we looked into it, Holly was the perfect person, you know, to come and, you know, and sort of her theme with us that day was how to speak your heart even when your voice shakes. And she was just an utterly generous and inspiring and committed voice, and you know, spent the day with us. But we tried to structure that day and even our workshops in a way that would be responsive to those barriers and would, you know, would be feeding, you know, to the audience. And and even though we had, you know, we had many men and many non-mothers and, you know, a handful of grandmothers and some high school kids, there was also a track running through that day that was sort of explicitly designed for, you know, for mothers. And that's been a lot of what we've done this whole year, is just, you know, providing forums and being a source for pulling people together.
So how are you working with mothers? Specifically, one of the things that you said earlier, that they don't feel that they can make a difference. And when we take a look at what's happening in Iraq or other places around the world, it does seem insurmountable. The odds seem insurmountable. So what kind of, I guess I'm interested in hearing, what's the conversation like, if I could be a fly on the wall, when the mothers are getting together, in terms of where they're taking their sense of activism, how they're approaching these kinds of large world problems. And certainly I'm interested in the everyday, you know, issues that happen in families as well. But I'm curious, given the state of the world.
I think that, you know, we meet twice a month for 2 hours, and when we have something huge like October 5th looming, I think we're meeting like every other day. But in general, the pace of our work, of our time together, is 2 hours twice a month. There's no question that we're braver personally than we were a year and a half ago, that we find in our gathering together, I think we find our voice with more confidence. We talk a lot about when the situations in which we lose our voice, and you know, we've kind of labeled that, you know, how to talk to your conservative brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. As in fact, who are women trying to influence? For the most part, we're not always up on soapboxes speaking to hundreds of people. It's likely to be in our intimate circles, which is can be very high risk. And, you know, and you have to live with those relationships. So, we're using that time to share with each other, you know, the obstacles we face, to share with each other sources of inspiration, readings that make a difference, and to just continue to experience ourselves out there and knowing that it's working, you know, that it, and what do I mean by that? That we're able to talk to people about what's in our hearts, that we're able to bring people together, that we're able to provide forums and resources to this community, which is in fact where we live and where we're, you know, looking to ground ourselves. Mm-hmm. So you would hear a lot of laughter. If you were a fly on the wall, you would hear people. This group of women delivers. Mm-hmm. This is a group of women. When they say they're going to do something, they do it. And so it's heavenly to work with them. You would hear a lot of frustration about when we're less than perfect. And you know, I just had a situation, and I was on a plane. And I'm really trying to think. I'm working hard on, you know, how to communicate across the divide. And I'm on a plane and I'm talking to this guy, and I know he's a fairly conservative guy, but he's a sweetheart in his own right too. And we're talking about children and how much we love them and this and that. And then he looks at me and he says, "So, are you going to watch the inaugural address tonight?" And before I can grab the words back, I say, "Not unless I have two shots of whiskey by my side," completely ending the conversation for the rest of the flight. Oh. And so, I mean, you know, we certainly have, we share our failures too, and our inability to speak what's in our heart without being judgmental or angry.
Mm-hmm. So, for example, I imagine you've had an opportunity to rethink that particular...
Thousands of times.
And what would you have said now?
Oh, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking that. I would have tried to talk about, because our conversation had been about our children, mm-hmm. I would have tried to back up and say, "It's really hard for me to listen to politicians today because I'm so worried about the world that we're leaving, you know, that I'll be leaving my child and the world he's going to be growing up in, and I'm thinking constantly about children in other parts of the world, so it's really hard for me." And then I would have just asked him what he worries about, and you know, and hopefully the question of the inaugural address would have been gone off the table, since it wasn't a very powerful conversation, and we would have been connecting about what matters, back connecting about what matters to us.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like what you're saying is, it matters when you speak from the heart, and speaking head-to-head doesn't always get us where we need to go.
Never does.
And yet, our school systems are really designed around head communications, around being right, about, you know, I was talking to somebody this morning about them being a debate club and how that, you know, was always about having the right answer and getting points for being right and winning. And it seems to me we have a system of education largely driven by women teachers, and I'm not casting aspersions, I'm just pointing it out, that somehow doesn't serve in the long run a conversation from the heart. And I'm wondering what your conversation around that has been and how you see us changing that dialogue.
You lost me when I realized that our school systems are largely populated by women, and the contrast there. Our focus around the school system, I mean, to the degree that, you know, we're focused on that, we have really been thinking about how to support kids in our school that want to talk about peace, and how to talk and how to support kids in our local schools. And in this moment, I'm talking primarily high school, who for example, are counter-recruiting, you know, so are trying to ensure that when the military recruiters who are all over mm-hmm. our local school systems in what I find to be in a very invasive way,
mm-hmm.
To be sure that that conversation is honest in terms of options, and that kids that have, you know, the kids that maybe are going into the military because they're desperate, they don't see many other opportunities out there for them, that there's another voice out there talking about what might be possible for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, that our school system being totally from the head, you know, I don't want to, you know, to say that debate and answers and things like that aren't important. They are. I do think when you're trying to influence people, when you're, you know, you've got to start by understanding where they're coming from and really hearing them. And my conversation, you know, my two shots of whiskey answer certainly didn't do that.
Indeed.
You know, but being able to talk to him about how worried I am for my child, you know, might have.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break and return with Susan Hay, who is the founder of Mothers and Others Uniting, and we'll continue this conversation. Stay with us.
There are a few things in life to let you know when you're becoming a man, like getting a driver's license, filling out college applications, and registering with Selective Service. Registration is the law, and it's easy if you go online at www.sss.gov. Plus, you stay eligible for college loans, government jobs, and job training. Get this. You can't renew your driver's license in most states if you haven't registered. So be a man. Register with Selective Service on your 18th birthday at www.sss.gov.
You're listening to WKMH, the student-run radio station at Keene State College. Someone once asked me to describe our alternative format. So here's a typical day condensed into a few seconds. Ready?
When I told my baby, do what you want to do.
Few creatures of the night have captured our imagination like vampires.
I see you sitting there.
Notice anything missing? Commercials. That's right. WKNH is the only radio station in the Keene area with no commercials. Just lots of new music all day, every day.
I might be moving to long tunnels.
Program your radio to 91.3 FM, WKNH, Keene's commercial-free sound alternative.
And we're back with Susan Hay, founder of Mothers and Others Uniting. She is a mother and an activist from Keene, New Hampshire. And Susan, I have this uncanny knack of finding PSAs that are wonderful jumping-off point for conversation. So we just heard one about the mandatory selective service registration, and it's a little chilling in a certain way to kind of hear that and to hear it sort of connected to the whole notion of in order to be a man, you know, you need to be doing this thing. And I'm wondering what you might say about what our culture's messages are to men in particular, to boys especially, and how you've noticed that we the messages that we tend to give them reinforce a certain way of being, a certain habit that maybe isn't about coming from the heart. What would you like to say about that?
Oh, John, I'm not going to answer your question. I'm sorry, because that public service announcement just brought up something that is really front and center for me right
Please.
Now. So maybe I can get back to it
sure.
after.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm deeply curious as to why that public service announcement is playing on this radio station. This is, as the second announcement said, a commercial-free radio station, yet you have a pretty unabashed commercial for
the
military.
There's the paradox.
And with the message, right, you linking manhood with military service, which is stupid. and limiting and perpetuates things that aren't healthy for this species. You know, when Marianne Williamson was here last year, I believe, she said, you know, this species is not evolving well. We fight too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I love this campus. I love its role in the town. And Keene State College has been enormously supportive to the work that Mothers Uniting has done. But I'm just sitting here asking myself, where is the faculty and the administration on that PSA? Why is that playing? If you have to make an announcement, let's just assume right now you have to. Why is one accepted that is so negative in terms of what it means to be a man? Not to mention, you know, what about the women that are serving? But where, you know, and I'm wondering about this beyond this example. I'm wondering about it. Where is the legal profession in terms of standing up for Lynn Stewart, who has, you know, recently been convicted? I don't know exactly what the charge was, but, you know, you have Ramsey Clark coming, you know, on Democracy Now talking about this as an outrage. But where is the legal community? And where is the religious community? Where is the clergy when people are picketing Gene Robinson's house saying God hates fags? You know, why is the local clergy, you know, in New Hampshire not speaking about that from the pulpit? I mean, you don't have to go further than God hates to suggest to me that they ought to be out there talking about that. And I'm just, I don't know whether it's fear or it's indifference or it's closet agreement, but things that I would think would be outrage, you know, would be outraging segments of this society. And you know, for the legal community, if they can do that to Lynn, they can do that to you. And I'm really sad about this, and I'm worried about this as to where is the outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got in front of, I'm sorry.
No, that's perfect.
Your question.
No, that's perfect. It's actually, I want to say, just from a male perspective, it's actually refreshing to hear a woman speak about the outrage. And maybe that speaks to some degree to what you were saying before. There's been some kind of cultural mores against a woman speaking, you know, anger, and cultural blocks against a man speaking vulnerability, which it seems to me splits each person in two.
Mm-hmm.
And then we play out the extremes.
Right.
And so that's upsetting as well. Let's go back, if we can, to the issue of finding common ground. We have such a divided, or to understand at least from one perspective and how we hear it on the news, a divided electorate. I don't think I've ever seen as much divisiveness and negativity in a political campaign as I saw in this last one. And I guess my question is, from your perspective and perhaps from the perspective of your organization, why is it important and how is it that we can bring the two sides together? I know you were speaking earlier about finding, what's important in terms of heart conversation, but how do you see this apparently in some instances unbridgeable gulf coming back together, especially when we're talking about working in community here locally?
The pursuit of common ground is kind of front and center for Mothers Uniting. And actually, we believe strongly that there is much more we agree about than we're divided about. And that, and particularly when you talk from the heart about, I think there are few mothers out there, regardless of their political position, that don't share my feelings of love for, you know, my child, that don't share huge concerns about their safety and the world that they will inherit. How we determine what is a threat and what we think, what we decide to do about it are probably very, very different. Mm-hmm. But we're probably joined very deeply on the issues that wake us up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so whether it's individuals or organizations, Mothers Uniting is really working to connect with those deeper issues. So, for example, if we're thinking on, you know, how are we going to feed the children, I'm perfectly happy to collaborate with a religious organization that may hold different beliefs about a whole number of things than we do, but can agree that it's really important to feed the children.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's figure out what we agree with, mm-hmm. and let's agree not to beat each other over the head with the issues we don't agree with,
mm-hmm.
and let's move ahead, because there's just an awful lot that we share.
Mm-hmm. And this reminds me of the conversations, some of the constructive conversations that have been built between pro-choicers and pro-lifers,
mm-hmm.
and they seem to agree that unwanted children are not a really great idea.
Right.
And so there are some prevention, and there's some ways to work together on prevention. There's some ways to work together on adoption. And there's, as you were saying, there's a lot of common ground before we reach the point of
divergence.
Exactly.
Right.
Which then ends up in things like clinics being bombed, people being harassed, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there was an incredibly beautiful moment when Gene Robertson was here at Keene State last week, I think, where and if for the listeners that don't know, Gene Robertson is the Episcopal bishop who also happens to be gay and who's experienced a tremendous amount of harassment and attacks on him and his family as this has, you know, as he's moved into this position and this has become, you know, very public. Or a young man in the audience who wasn't hostile but was very confident in his position and was talking about and was reading scripture that he felt condemned Gene and his beliefs, and that these were literally true. And in one of the most generous moments I've ever seen, Gene, his response began by, "There is so much you and I have in common," and just validating and acknowledging this young man for his beliefs and his passion around his beliefs and what mattered to him, and then saying, "Now there's one or two things that we disagree on, and let me share where I'm coming from on those." And there wasn't an ounce of anger in his voice when he was doing that. And it was just a lovely, lovely moment. And if we could all figure out, and I am not really skilled at this, I'm much more on the side of I need two shots of whiskey to listen to the inaugural address.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if we could all find those, you know, the grace to do that, and what it is not. And I think what, you know, particularly as Democrats and progressives, what I hear out there all the time is, you know, we need to move to the center. I don't think we need to water down what we believe in at all to find common ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this kind of reminds me of some of the work that was happening at the workshop on October 5th, and some other work that's happened here in town locally, specifically nonviolent communication.
Yeah.
And the skills around that. And I'm wondering if you want to speak to your experience with any of that, and how you feel that could, you know, turn things around, either locally or nationally, how we might get involved with this.
Well, you know, the concept these days, I'm seeing like all that's problematic in the world is I tend to reduce things,
mm-hmm.
and there's such a lack of empathy in the world. We just it is so hard for us, whether it's to take the time or to suspend our own judgments or to just be willing to listen,
mm-hmm.
to what's true for someone else. I mean, I remember when Arafat died, about an hour and a half after this man's been dead, and I think it was Condoleezza Rice is, you know, pontificating about, well, the Arabs better not lose this opportunity. You know, this is a window of opportunity, and if they don't figure that out, you know, and it was just like, you know, can we just pay attention to the fact that for better or worse, this was their leader. It was pretty much the only one they had, and he just died.
Mm-hmm.
So for right now, they're a little bit in, you know, they're dealing with loss mm-hmm. and grief and a little bit of, you know, ambiguity about what the hell's coming next. Mm-hmm. What's coming next. And, excuse me.
I think you could say that in here. Yeah.
Okay. and I just, you know, I know it's hard for me, you know, sometimes. And so, I mean, what I like, nonviolent communication is a way of saying and speaking your truth. In a way that has some hope of being heard and drawing out someone else's truth and in a way where there's some ability to find, you know, a place where communication can happen, where a real exchange can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that Mothers Uniting is going to be working really hard to support is the Department of Peace mm-hmm. initiative. And again, I don't know how familiar people are with this, but this actually the concept, the idea of a Department of Peace has been around since this country was formed. I believe John Adams was the first person to propose it.
Wow.
One of those guys, anyway. And Dennis Kucinich introduced a bill in the last Congress and is going to be reintroducing that bill. It has 50-some congressmen, you know, have signed it. We need a whole lot more. But one of the things, one of the impacts that I think that can have is to just help provide support and an infrastructure for a more empathetic conversation
mm-hmm.
and a more empathetic approach to differences.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that in order for that to really work, we really have to take violence off the table as a legitimate response to either resolving differences or getting more of what we want or dealing with our fears. We're very frightened as a species, and our investment in aggression at this point as a species is just we're at, you know, in my mind, we're at a point where either we figure out another way or we won't be here very long. So I really see nonviolent communication as a very practical, effective approach to talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. And just so people are tuned in, actually, the next hour on Oasis Journeys, I will be going into more detail in honor of your being here on nonviolent communication.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah. So you were talking about the Department of Peace, and I'm wondering if you can give our listeners a little bit more detail about, I know it's a pretty comprehensive thing that's planned there, and can you tell us a little more about the bill and about how that
sure.
is intended to work?
The bill proposes that there will be a federal level, a cabinet position, so a Secretary of Peace sitting in the cabinet along with the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Education, et cetera, whose mission will be to look both domestically and internationally at approaches to resolving differences and de-escalating the violence in our society. And, you know, I think the proposal is to take 5% of the defense budget, and that would be a good place to start in terms of funding it.
Mm-hmm.
The focus of the Department of Peace is at least 50% domestic,
mm-hmm.
sort of physician heal thyself.
Right.
And this is a very violent society, and how can we look at, you know, issues of, you know, our penal system,
mm-hmm.
at issues of domestic violence, at issues of, you know, how toxic our school systems are for many children in terms of the bullying and the scapegoating that goes on. Can look at the issues of, you know, our incredible fear of gay and lesbians, so certainly the Department of Peace will be focusing on domestic issues as well as looking around the world at the same places that, you know, and the same issues that the Department of Defense is looking at and saying,
mm-hmm.
The Secretary of State and saying, what would be a way of peacefully resolving this, and how can we invest our resources in supporting those initiatives?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a the establishment also of a National Peace Academy that sort of is on equal footing with the, you know, the West Points of the world.
Imagine that.
So, I mean, my, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. If this was in place so that my son had the choice of going to a peace academy, you know, when he graduates in 10 years or 8 years, 9 years, that'd be a great thing.
Well, that's really almost a paradigm, certainly a paradigm shift in the way we think about things. There was a study done by Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting of 2 or 3 weeks around the time leading up to the war, before the war, a couple of years ago, before the war started, and they looked at the 4 major networks, or 4 or 5, including PBS, and on there were 393 interviews over that course of time. All but 3 of them had pro-war voices. Only 3 were anti-war or raised any question as to the validity of war. So having a Department of Peace is exciting because it raises the conversation to legitimacy around that peace. It not only is legitimate, but ought to be the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth choice before we ever go to something else.
Well, and it's also, peace is not just the absence of war.
Indeed.
It needs, it's a lot of hard work, and it takes a lot of courage to work for peace. It's, you know, people that are really working to bring peaceful solutions in violent situations are risking their lives when they're doing that. I put in a little plug. Mothers Uniting will be doing a workshop on the Department of Peace on April Fool's Day.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, possibly with the recognition that we're tilting at windmills here, but and people can go to our website, mothersuniting.org, for details about that.
At what time and where?
It will be at the Keene State College camp, and it will be 8:30 until 2:30 on April 1st.
And where is the camp?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Why not?
It's out by the airport.
Okay.
I don't know the exact direction.
And is there a cost involved with that?
There'll be a minimal fee to cover lunch,
but
not much.
Wonderful. And who's going to be there?
That we are really working for this to have individuals, but people there, because they're passionately interested in it, but also individuals representing organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when I think of people working in probation,
mm-hmm.
people working in domestic violence, people working in youth services,
mm-hmm.
local clergy, these are people that, in order to get a bill like this passed, it's one thing if Susan Hay is there. It's another thing if, you know, the public defender is in Charlie Bass's office talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
So we are welcoming people who are just personally committed to this, and we're actively going out after people
mm-hmm.
who are sitting in organizations that we think are pivotal to this bill being recognized and passed.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And we're going to go to another break. And after that, we'll certainly take your calls if you want to give us a call and talk with Susan Hay. The number is 358-8863, and we'll be happy to take your call and continue this conversation. Stay with us.
Experts say Americans are now taking more extended weekend trips than week-long vacations. As a result, new internet sites are popping up to guide travelers to unusual places to see in a day. One website walks travelers through places of American history not found in most guidebooks, such as where Elvis made his stage debut or where the first plate of buffalo wings was served. The site, called www.hamptonlandmarks.com, was launched by Hampton Inn, whose interest in landmarks also helps preserve unusual roadside attractions.
All right, Groove Cookies and Spoofus Goofus Aficionados. Every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., you can groove and laugh with Michelli's Vixolodian Muse, a fine hump day blend of comedy and jams. So giggle and snicker, but keep your hands on the wheel and
may the force be with you always.
Hey. And we're back with Susan Hay, founder of Mothers and Others Uniting, sometimes known as Mothers Uniting. We've added the others in there because...
Because that's our name.
Heck, there are some others, too.
Yeah.
And I noticed that on your website you have a petition. I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about that.
Right around the time of the election, actually, it was an outgrowth of October 5th, and we were we wanted to make a statement about our belief that we needed to take this off, that war is off the table as a viable means of solving our differences with other countries. We found it was so wonderful to see a quote from Eisenhower about the cost of war. And we offered people, we wanted this to be something that the community could be involved in. We offered people an opportunity to sign the petition, and then we put it in the Keene Sentinel, a half-page ad. Mm-hmm. And it's now on our website, and it's very interesting watching how websites work. Today I got a woman sending me saying she wanted to sign it. She's from Easton, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I haven't done yet is put everybody's name on the website who signed it, because mm-hmm. we just haven't gotten to that. But that's mm-hmm. our goal, is to have it be a living document.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And we actually have a caller.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And Tim, are you with us? And this is... Can you hear?
I cannot.
No, I can't either.
Yes, I am.
There you are. Hey Tim, go ahead and ask your question.
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Tim. Can you hear us, Tim?
A friend of mine at the high school showed me his periodic table chart from high school. And it's sponsored by the Navy. The high school handed them out, basically an advertisement for the Navy. And I'm wondering about the other ways that the recruiters are using to subvert the students, or how they're getting their messages into the school halls and whatnot, besides sitting over in the employment office or whatnot.
Right.
Thank you. I'll take my answer off air.
Thanks for calling, Tim.
Tim, it's really very scary, the latitude that the military has in our schools right now. I'm an executive recruiter, and I recruit a lot of executives, high-tech executives, and particularly a lot of sales executives. And I watch what they're doing in the schools, and this is a well-oiled, well-orchestrated sales campaign. They are coming in and... they have just a tremendous, I know a teacher in a high school who had a student pulled out of his science class to go talk to a military recruiter. And he said, he's in class. And the response was, let him go. And, the subtext of that was, he's not going anywhere anyway. They are in the cafeteria. They are. They have very slick materials. They have very slick messages. Right. They're giving. There's lots of giveaways. And I'm not trying to sit here and say that nobody should go into the military. I just think that people. It is desperately important that they get the truth about what their service involves and what they're signing away for and what they are or are not going to get. And that secondly, that there's somebody there to help deconstruct the message and the sales approach and have them understand what's happening to them and how they're being moved. So, for those of, us who have children in the high school now, it's very, very important that you know what the message is that the kids are getting and how much access they have to them. As part of the No Child Left Behind law, for schools to continue getting access to certain fundings, they have to give the military the names and addresses and phone numbers of kids in high school. And the only way you can, as a parent, the only way a parent can avoid that is if they write a letter to the principal saying that they don't want that information given out. And, oh, by the way, if that information isn't received by an appropriate date, which is relatively hidden in information that goes out to parents, it's too late. And And there are some very courageous communities around the country that have said, you know what, we'll do without the money.
Mm-hmm.
We're not giving kids access. You know, we're not giving the military this kind of blanket access to our children.
Mm-hmm.
For right now, you know, we just, you know, there's some kids in the local high school that are being very, they're committed to being out there and just offering another message, and my hat's off to them.
Mm-hmm. So, it sounds like that your outreach is going to several different places. I know you were the sponsor of the march on the inaugural day a few weeks ago, and it was a march that went from Keene State up through the square. Can you tell us what you were hoping to accomplish with that, and or what you did accomplish with that, and what your next steps are going to be beyond this event that's coming up that you were telling us about, the Department of Peace event on April 1st?
Sure. There was Cheryl Quimby. I think she's in Hawaii right now. But Cheryl kind of came flying out to talk to me at Colony Mill and said, "Aren't you one of those Mothers Uniting?" I said, "Yes, yes, I am." And she said, "We can't let this day go unmarked." And that just rang so true that, you know, in a day where, you know, we're saying to the world that this is our president, it just felt important to be, as a community, saying that many, many, many of us believe that this is the wrong direction. And by the way, I believe it would have been important to be out there whether even if John Kerry was elected. I don't think this is such a Democrat Republican thing so much as, you know, our country is on a very warring path, and we do not believe this is the right path. And so it felt right to invite the community to come out and just sort of bear witness to that. And honestly, John, I didn't know that morning whether we were going to have 10 people or 200 people. I had no idea who was going to show up. And it was so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
There was grandparents there with banners that I swear were there from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
There was high school kids. There was college kids. There was parents with young children out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was 126 of us, I was told. And we were there to remind ourselves and each other that we are there,
mm-hmm.
and that we do believe this, and that, and to look around and be able to see those faces and say, there is a community of people here, and it's probably very much larger than what was there on the square
mm-hmm.
that day, that is looking for a different approach and a different alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a statement to anyone, you know, who was listening, and
mm-hmm.
and mostly to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, going forward, we're right in the middle of sort of laying our plans for the next year. We are going to do another event in the fall. And we've spent a lot of time working in the last month or so on, okay, now, what are the barriers to, more directly, what are the barriers to creating a nonviolent and just world for all children?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we put all of that together, and how can we use a large event to really highlight those themes? So there will be, and I don't know who it will be, but we didn't know till July that it was going to be Holly Neer and the Day of Waging Peace.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's listening out there and has ideas about people that you'd like to see brought to town that carry a message of peace and common ground and the power of that, and whether they're an entertainer or an activist or both,
mm-hmm.
you know, call us, email us.
Mm-hmm. On your website, you have 10 steps for creating peace.
Yes, we do.
And I'm going to go ahead and read these, and if you want to comment on any of them.
Okay.
All right. First is read the Department of Peace bill. Now, that can be accessed from your website.
It can.
Which is a mind-boggling document. It's so inspiring. I really recommend people go to the website and take a look at that. And then you say connect with local groups that are working to make this a reality. And which other local groups come to mind?
Well, one would be us.
Mm-hmm.
And And I don't know of any other groups locally right here that are. The Vermont Peace Academy, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful organization, you know, right across the river over in Vermont and mm-hmm. associated with Goddard College, is actually very involved with this also. And we're doing a lot of talking and working with them. And a number of them were involved with us on October 5th. It's a mm-hmm. great organization.
Mm-hmm. There's also an organization in Brattleboro called Brattleboro Area Peace and Justice Group that,
yes.
that may be involved in that. Monadnock Freedom Forum has also been involved in peace movements. We were a co-sponsor of
you
the
You most certainly
well.
Were. Yeah. And
a bunch of us were out there in the cold, freezing
you were.
Cold.
You yeah. certainly Indeed. Were.
Then it says, read our petition for peace, which we've talked about. And
right.
and you can sign it and send an email and add your name to that. Number three is write a letter to the editor on a topic relevant to creating a nonviolent and just world for all children. Try to do this once a month.
Right.
So it's important to get the word out there and start the conversation. Four, you say turn off your TV for the day and keep the news off for a week. Why?
Because there are, it's managing the load. And I think that there are times where it's easy for all of us, to get overloaded by how much pain there is in the world. I'm not sure that there's more pain in the world than there was 50 years ago. And, we can be more acutely aware of it.
Certainly.
And I think that, you go on a fast every once in a while to clean out your system. I think it's useful to detox sometimes mm-hmm. from that so mm-hmm. that you can enter back into it with a less pained expression on your face.
Mm-hmm. Number five, select a mantra that brings you peace. Tape it to your bathroom mirror, your day planner, and your dashboard, and repeat often. Do you have a mantra that you like to repeat?
Do I have a mantra I'd like to do? I have a mantra, but I honestly don't want to repeat it.
That's fine. So any mantra that helps focus our awareness
yeah.
and intention on creating peace, especially when we're driving down the road and
right.
tend to get impatient on one thing or another. Six was the invitation to the Inauguration Day March, which has now passed. Seven, every day for a week, hug your children, look them in the eye, and tell them how much you love them.
Yeah, and that's probably one that could be seen as like, and I hope it isn't, but condescending or like no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, when I make that connection with my son, I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, and mm-hmm. It so sources me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably less. I think that my son knows I love him,
mm-hmm.
but it's in doing that yes. I connect with why I'm doing what I'm doing.
And I can actually speak to that with a son of who's older, who's 16, and kids that age, great dad, kind of.
Thanks for sharing.
Right, but there is a slightly different bounce in his walk when mm-hmm. he hears that. There's something that's still very nourishing, I think, for both sides to be able to say that, especially for boys who perhaps don't hear it as much as girls or are not open to it as much as girls tend to be. Number eight, find the local groups in your area who are maintaining peace vigils against our war in Iraq and make a bright and beautiful sign and join them once a month. There's still folks in the square every weekend.
Boy, and these people, what an amazing witness they've done for the last 2 years out there. I they're a constant source of inspiration to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
come on out. It's mm-hmm. 11 o'clock on Saturday mornings.
Number nine, read. There's four of them there. Join an online alternative media news distributor, and there are some links there on your site to some
yeah.
alternative news. And pick a book from our reading list. So there's a reading list there as well.
Actually, there isn't one yet, but there will be soon.
Okay.
If I could recommend to our listeners, there's a wonderful book called Hope in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a equally wonderful book by Paul Loeb called The Soul of a Citizen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And finally, find a relationship that is disrupted and plagued by neglect or misunderstanding and reach out and try to connect with that individual. Share what is going on in your heart and work hard to hear what is going on in theirs.
Practice.
That comes down to really grounding it in everyday experience. And how can people get in touch with you, Sue?
You can reach Mothers Uniting at sue@mothersuniting.org
okay.
or just go to our website at mothersuniting.org, and our phone number is 603-357-9413.
Okay. And just another reminder of that upcoming event on April 1st, the Department of Peace.
You can call us or email us and we'll get you details.
And there'll be more information on your website as well. So we thank you so much for coming here and sharing a very inspiring vision to help us all wake up a little bit more. And there's nothing that makes my soul smile more than the idea of a bunch of mothers getting together and making it happen. I carry a personal belief, or perhaps it's a vision, that that this will make a grand difference, that mothers and women getting together really will make a tremendous difference when they find their voice. And you seem to be on the forefront of helping that happen. So thank you so much.
It's great to be here. Thanks, John.
All right. And we've been talking with